three times a lady.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Check the Gate, Film Lovers Deep Dive. I'm Bert, and as always, I'm joined here with Brandon.
Hello.
And Michael.
Hi.
And today we're doing the 2004 film Garden State, our fourth film in our rom-com snack pack. Brandon, this was your first film that you chose. This is your genre, by the way, and then it was your first film you chose. Go into a little bit, why this film?
You know, probably because this movie came out in 2004, and it was like...
Hell of a year.
Yeah, the year before I graduated high school, so like I'm at that peak, you know, emotional molding phase, I guess you could say. And I don't know, it just hit home. It was a killer soundtrack. I thought it was really witty. You know, my sense of humor, dry sense of humor. I just loved it. It was good.
Yeah.
Good ending.
Michael, had you seen this before, Michael?
No, I had only heard of it. But no, never had seen it.
Only heard tales.
Only heard stories. Yeah.
Can't wait to hear what you thought of it.
I fucking loved it.
Did you?
I loved it. Oh, that was awesome. I got done. I was like, that was wonderful. Well, see, because it had that sort of that cliche, like early Coldplay, I feel like is good.
Oh yeah.
I really think it's good. Yeah. And I think
I'm not gonna lie. No hating.
Yeah. I don't, yeah. Who cares if you know, it's what I feel, you know? So it's what I feel. But
Chris Martin's like, what's wrong with us now?
Yeah. It's like, well, okay. But
now I'm all yellow.
Yeah. So
no, go back to Coldplay.
Yeah. Early Coldplay was good. And it kind of like encapsulates that. The Shins, I love The Shins, so that was the fun part. But then also just the quirky little, like, I felt like Natalie Portman was great in it, like being the awkward, like, you want to leave, oh, I made this weird, like that part, like, was all great.
The complete polar opposite of Braff in this movie.
Yeah. Yes.
Where he's closed off, doesn't want to talk to anything, and she's an oversharer.
Yeah.
Excited oversharer.
Yeah. I think also I really liked it is because the relationship between Natalie Portman and Zach Braff reminds me a lot of the relationship between me and my wife. Like, Emma feels a lot and stuff, and I do, but like it's also, it's like matching. Like, one's a little bit more outward, but then it's like, I don't know, it reminds me a lot of the relationship with my wife. Maybe that's why I like it so much.
But cool. Nice. Yeah, the soundtrack is just awesome. Like, it's perfect. All the music that they introduce at the certain times of the scenes, like, it's perfect. Goes I mean, I have listened to this soundtrack probably like 100 times, and I've seen this movie probably like 25 times. My wife was getting super annoyed at me last night. She's like, are you really going to quote this entire movie? And I was like, sorry, I'll stop.
I hope so.
I can't help it.
Save it for the pod, Brandon.
Well, and then I didn't realize that there was going to be commercial breaks on the how we watched it. And so, like, I fell asleep during the, like, fifth commercial break.
Oh.
So that was upsetting. But
how did you watch it?
Yeah, where'd you watch it at commercial?
On Disney Plus.
Oh, I watched it on Hulu. Ad free, baby.
But see, we don't have Hulu. We have just Disney Plus, but
I have somebody else's Hulu, and it's the premium.
Oh, I forgot that Hulu has.
But yeah,
has
so
ads,
since it's a Hulu. Since it's a Hulu movie, it threw like five commercial breaks in there. And I was like, should be a crime.
I was like, isn't it 20th Century Fox also, which Disney owns, but it's Miramax. So I don't know. It's weird how it ended up on but
I mean, I own the movie, but do you know how hard to find a DVD player it is these days?
How hard?
It's pretty hard.
I have a DVD player. So
I was like,
that.
I got an Xbox, you know?
Yeah, I could have put it on the PlayStation, but that's in the other room, and then you know. So this is a big deal.
Man. Yeah.
This guy's got more rooms than his house.
Yeah.
Also got more kids than you guys.
That you know of. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Technically, I guess, yeah.
I did the old opinion rewards thing and used my money. So I paid like 62 cents for it.
Nice.
So
nice. I own this movie too, but it's packed away. My DVD racks are arriving today, so I will actually have movies to choose out of. I just didn't want to go digging through boxes trying to find it.
I can't remember. Had you seen this?
I had only seen it one time.
Gotcha.
I mentioned to you last week off air that there was another guy back in the good old days, question mark?
Yeah.
Working night crew together. His name was Mikey, who loved this movie. It was one of his favorite movies. Talked about it all the time.
Shout out, Mikey.
And it was one... Mikey Beans! It's one of those movies that he talked up so much. We had a lot of similar tastes, music and movie-wise. He skewed a bit more horror than I really was, but like we had like a happy medium in the middle. So I went to Hastings, RIP.
Yeah.
And bought it. And yeah, but I've only seen it once. I'm a little less high on it than you guys are, but I don't think it's bad. I'm just like, it didn't really move the needle for me. I did enjoy it. So I watched it twice because I hadn't seen it in probably 15 years, which seems crazy to think that we were all on that crew 15 years together. maybe 12 years 12 ago. Years but ago, still.
I was like, close enough. 15 years ago. I was
we're closer
16,
to
bro.
15 than not. So
yeah. And I remember just being like, oh, well, I think maybe he just kind of hyped it up for me too much. Not quite to a Goonies effect. I know I have a long storied distaste of that movie. Like I was like, man, if I would have seen it on my own, like rented it, like Redboxed it, watched it, I probably would have enjoyed it better. But like Mikey was like, man, this movie is the best movie.
Yeah.
And it didn't really do anything for me.
It's the Avatar effect.
Yes.
That I know
because you were right in the high of Say Anything last week. So maybe that's why.
Also true. and it's completely, you know, he is so, I don't want to use the word mopey. He's just very sad for like the majority of this movie. So when I watched it a couple days ago, just try to like dry run, no notes, go through it, I was just like, man, this guy's such a bummer. Watching it this morning for my note sesh, I was like, it washed over me a lot better. I'm definitely glad I watched it twice because I would have had a completely different opinion had I just taken notes that first time. It would have been like I don't get it. But like this time this morning, I was like, okay, I do see the appeal in here. It's not, again, I don't think it's a bad movie. It's just one of those perfectly fine movies for me. I love that you two love it.
Get me wrong. I think, but there's a reason he's mopey the whole movie.
No, yes. I just, when you think about 12 years ago, I was like, oh, this is the mopey Zach Braff movie. Where if you would have asked me a week ago, I would have said he's trying so hard not to be Scrubs. You know, polar opposite of. Watching it this time, I was like, okay, obviously I completely forgot that he's like super medicated and then is.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like my first note is Zach Braff's face is cheesy AF. Like he overdoes it. So there are some negative things about it. If you really want to nitpick it, but
he nails in the sad smolder for sure.
Yeah. But I feel like there's a reason.
The thousand yard stare in his eyes.
Yeah. And he progressively though, like comes out of that. Right.
Yes, because he's weaning off
drugs.
20 years of medication.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, I mean, there's, like, it's totally obviously not, like, it's good that we have movies that, like, oh, one of us really likes, the other two, man, two of us, there's not very many that all three of us are just like, fuck yeah, you know?
Yeah. But and that's just going to come with us choose, you know, everybody's tastes are different.
Yeah.
I am in my new era where there's something for everybody and there's also things that aren't for anybody, you know, everybody. Where when we started this podcast, we were just like, fuck this movie, you know?
Yeah.
Like now it's like like maybe it really was the interstellar turning point where you're just like, hey, you know, maybe people can just enjoy things and that's fine.
Yeah, I feel like
not everything needs to be an Academy Award nominated picture, you know.
Even though, like, Interstellar should have been,
it won Oscars. It's just, you know, it's just like, why can't people just enjoy what they enjoy, and that's fine.
Wow,
let's get back to making real movies.
I feel like the scrutiny now of me saying I haven't seen a movie is a much lesser impact than it was before. It was like, you never seen this movie? Oh my god! It's like,
yeah, but those were like,
yeah, but we're not.
Those were like the top 100 movies of all time. That
I think it's different now because now we're just choosing. We're grab bagging
movies that, you know. Yeah. I'm choosing movies that I hoped you guys hadn't seen. You know.
So you're saying that?
So you didn't think we hadn't seen Wedding Crashers?
Well, that was
I never seen it. You know.
I believe it. Damn, Michael. No.
stupid motherfucker.
Let's go ahead and nip that in the bud. We never thought you were stupid for having seen Training Day. It was just wild that you hadn't.
It was just absolutely blasphemous that I had not.
I'm still shook by it.
Yeah, I know. It's the source of tension in our group relationship. I know. I'm working on it. All right.
This is coming from a guy who's only seen Training Day once. Hey, yeah. All right?
You've come a long way,
the days
man.
Of being like, hey, Michael, you want to watch Toy Story again or something? Are gone, I guess.
Well, that was because every time we were about to choose a movie, you say, I hope it's Toy Story. Hope it's Toy Story.
Right. That's true. And it was. One time. And then we moved on.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyways.
Do we need to heal this relationship right now?
There's a lot coming out.
Yeah. Somebody play the Shins in the background and let's talk through this real quick.
No, I'm just joshing around.
Oh, okay. Well, if that's the case, let's dive into this puppy.
Let's do it.
Like I said, we're doing Garden State, a 2004 film, which is about a quietly troubled young man returns home for his mother's funeral after being estranged from his family for a decade. And I would say that sums up the first 2 minutes. Doesn't really talk anything else about the movie.
No.
Top three films of 2004. Number three, Spider-Man 2.
Ooh.
Number two, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. Number one, Shrek 2.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Shrek 2 grossed $932 million at the box office.
I believe it.
Jeez.
That's insane to me.
What a year, though, for, like, movies.
Somebody. Yeah.
Yeah. Shrek 2 is pretty good.
It's my favorite.
The one with Puss in Boots? Yep.
Is Puss in Boots in that one?
Yeah, and then it's with the, I think that's
the Fairy Godmother.
Yeah, the Fairy Godmother.
Oh.
He's like, do the roar.
Ticket cost in 2004, $6.21, which is equivalent to $10.54 our money. The budget for the film was a mere $2.5 million, which is equivalent to $4.2 million. The box office was $35.8 million, which is equivalent to $60.7 million. So it made a lot of money off a tiny budget. I was surprised
they, like,
to find out.
On location. Like.
Yeah.
They were like
in Jay-Z?
Yeah, they were like in one scene they were like holding up traffic behind them, like if you pay attention, like I think it's all three of them are on the motorcycle and they're going down like the highway and like there's
I was
literally
noticing
like,
they seemed like they were driving hella slow.
Yeah, and there was like lines of cars behind them.
You don't think the Jersey Turnpike is crazy crowded?
No joke.
I forgot what I was going to say. Must not have been important.
They made a bunch of money on a little.
Oh, I was surprised to, because I know Zach Braff, you know, kind of dabbled in, because he wrote and directed this movie.
Yeah.
That it was another 10 years before he made another film.
Oh.
With Wish I Were Here, something like that.
Yeah.
Which I never saw.
Me neither.
But. And this film was nominated for 0 Academy Awards, but Zach Braff won a Grammy for Best Soundtrack Album, because he wrote, directed, and he acquired the songs, the rights, and put them into the movie. So he technically is a Grammy winner for accumulating songs for this film. So in 2005, he is a quarter of a way to an EGOT, yeah. Zach Braff.
Interesting.
I remember the first time when I saw this, when we get that opening scene where, you know, like, we're in the middle of a plane crash, and he's just, like, nonchalantly going down with the plane. He's messing with the air. I didn't realize it was a dream until the second time watching it, because I remember thinking, oh... Because all of a sudden it cuts to him waking up in that hospital white. He's not in a hospital, yeah. But his house is sterile, crazy house. White. Yes. I'm like, oh, this must be how the movie ends, where he gets on the plane coming home and the plane goes down. So the whole time I'm waiting for him. I was like, this must be the emotional center where he's finally better. And then it's like one of those Alanis Morissette, you know. Isn't this nice as the plane's going down? Like, I finally fixed myself, and now I'm about to die in a plane crash.
I could see that. That's not the case. But it's not.
I was shocked at the end. I was like, oh, that's weird. And then watching it this time, I was like, oh, it's clearly a fucking dream, Robert.
I never put that part together. I actually forgot about it until now. Like, yeah, I guess I never was like, oh, okay. But then I guess when there's that sort of, like, blending in where the overhead, like the PA is like, now from Newark, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, okay, that makes sense.
Well, and then you hear the phone ringing in the background, and that's what he snaps to. And he's just very melancholy in the bed as the phone rings, goes to the answering machine. It's his dad saying, we can't talk if you don't answer. I don't really know how to do this on an answering machine, but since you won't pick up the phone, I guess I'll just say it. Your mom died. She drowned last night in the tub, and you need to come home for her funeral. He gets out of bed. We see him open up the cabinet, and we see just mountains of pills that we find out later that's like all different pills that he's been taking for. Like, they say he said he's 26, and he's been on the pill since he was 9.
Damn.
So just to be like that crazily heavily medicated, maybe not crazy, that's a terrible word to use, but like,
even multiple ones. Jeez,
I mean, I
like,
think that's crazy medicated.
Yeah. Where he, you know, he kind of just, you know, gets in his car, driving to work. He works at he's a waiter for a terrible job that's like a super fancy Vietnamese restaurant where he has to put on like eyeliner and fake eyelashes and go deal with
Hollywood bread.
He's like, do you know how many applicants there were today? 43. He's like, all of them want your
all
job.
The way from Idaho to South Dakota.
Yeah, I was like,
everybody
hey.
Wants the only thing they want more than a spot on Everybody Loves Raymond is your job. Always love an Idaho shout out.
Oh,
even
yeah.
from the great state of Texas. He like has the earpiece in, goes and he like talks to those terrible people at the table. He's like, what are you on your fucking break? Nah, I'm just kidding. We need like 4 Kettle One and vodkas and she's like on the phone, she's like, a Kettle One Cosmo with Red Bull.
Yeah.
And also some bread. And he goes, oh, we don't have bread here. He goes, it's a fucking restaurant. You don't got fucking bread?
It's like, a Vietnamese restaurant.
It's a Vietnamese. And she's like, I don't know, give me some fucking bamboo or something.
Give me something to chew on.
Yeah. I'll see if I can find anything. Cut to him on a plane. Not even on a plane. We just cut to him at the Newark airport. The PA system is telling us that he has landed in Newark. And then he's at his mother's funeral, where his aunt, in a double C thick New Jersey accent, is singing once, twice, three times
a lady.
See, and now you guys know, like, when Mikey would say that shit over and over again.
No, he always told me that it was like, you know, that was one of the parts he was just like, it is funny, so funny, and like almost, her makeup is all smeared from crying.
I almost wanted to just pause it and start belting that when I was watching it last night.
I love it.
It's pretty funny.
I will say, this entire week, I have been... that we have one spot in our new house, but the acoustics are just insane. singing In Your Eyes in that one room, just like in the house by myself.
That's what I'm saying, man. The music from that, like those, oh, dude, it just like has this ambiance where you just like, you know, want to be standing on a cliff with you with the with an open,
the
you know,
billowy shirt. White shirt.
Yeah, it all billowing in the wind, you know.
Well, looking like Mark Hoppus from All the Small Things music video. Yeah. Just
yeah, or like just on the front of the Titanic, just like, you know.
There you go. Yeah. I'm king of the world.
Yeah.
While Once, Twice, Three Times a Lady is being played by a Jersey lady.
That'd be cool with that, too.
Over at the funeral, he sees some past haunts. One played by Peter Sarsgaard. Not Skarsgård. Sarsgaard. Close. He's not part of the Skarsgård family. Mm. He's part of the Sarsgaard family. There is a difference.
There is a difference, yeah. And I messed that up.
Well, so you said that, and I was like, is he? He doesn't look like any of them.
I got the I got the last name wrong, the group.
They're from the same countries, like Denmark or Norway. They're grave diggers. They're hanging out. He's like, oh, what are you doing here, man? He's like, oh, my mom died. And he goes, oh, it's fucked up. Hey, want to go to a party later? It'll be super chill. I love back at the reception for the funeral. He's talking to that same aunt. She's like, I got shit for you. You'll love it. I need you to try it on now. Why do you need me to try it on? Just in case it doesn't fit, I can fix it. Just in case you leave and we don't see you again for another 9 years.
It's like the last of your mom's design.
Yeah, you'll love it. I love the fabric. Cut to him standing. It's matching the wallpaper, and he literally is camouflaged into the wall with classic sad brat face.
Yeah.
He confronts his dad, played by Ian Holm, Bilbo Baggins himself, who has also kind of got a little Jersey affectation in this movie, too.
Subtle.
I think it rings pretty hard for me because I know him as a British actor, and he's talking like this. They clearly have some tension where they're trying to talk, you know, hey, you know, house looks nice. You know, we renovated the, oh, yeah, the bathroom, man, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Did you really? No, we didn't.
But then his dad like sticks a jab in with like, it's really nice to see you. Glad you could fit us in. Like that kind of thing. And then Raph is just like,
okay.
Just kind of like, he doesn't throw up the deuce, but just kind of just like, all right. Some things never change. Kind of like walks out of the room, goes in the garage, and happens upon what appears to be a World War II motorcycle. Complete with sidecar.
Sidecars which for bitches.
Yay, hell yeah, brother. Yeah. And Sarsgaard rides in it.
Yeah, so. Love it. He owns it. In his lacrosse helmet.
He takes off to go to the party, and it's when he gets pulled over by a police officer, and the guy gets out, what the fuck is going on? You're doing 82 in a goddamn 20. only to find out that it's another past friend, Kenny. Kenny's a dork.
I love Kenny.
He's like, Kenny, you're a cop? I know, man. I don't know. I didn't know what else to do.
He's like, you see, this is the safety.
He's just like, hey, but people listen to me now because they have to. As he like pulls the gun out and he goes, no, cool. And here's the safety.
You've come a long way from doing lines of coke in the bathroom.
Last time I saw you, you were doing lines of coke off a urinal. He goes, la, 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 la. Yeah.
He's a character. He's like, he's just a silly dude.
I love how he's like, hey, your mom died, man. And he's like, yeah, I know. He's like, oh, that's why you're here. He's like, anyway, how was I? And he's like, what do you mean? He's like, oh, you know, with the butt ends in the air kind of thing. He's like, you were a dick, so. He's like, nice. I heard you were in a movie. You know, he's like, yeah. He's a fucking De Niro, man. And he goes, huh? Just great actor, De Niro.
Yeah, he's like some Deer Hunter or something.
Yeah, Deer Hunter. Well, he just says Deer Hunter.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's like De Niro and a Deer Hunter. Yeah, well, yeah, it's a great actor, man.
And he's like, all right, Kenny. Cut to him entering a party. And this party gives off, we're all in our mid to late 20s, but we've clearly done nothing with our lives kind of thing. It like feels... I had to, I mean, they mention it finally later that they're 26. So So I was like, are these people supposed to be in college? Because it just has like that, you know, that smoke hazed field party atmosphere.
Yeah.
We're all just hanging out, drinking and doing drugs. But we're all adults who have, like I said, not really done anything with ourselves. Except for Jesse, who is a millionaire because he sold a patent to the military for silent Velcro.
Nailed it.
Fucking
castle. Who'd have thought?
I love that scene too, when he's like, when he's tearing it apart, and it's just, and it's the nothing. Whole he's scene like, is just silent. He's like,
fucking silent Velcro, man. He's a millionaire, and he's like, "What have you been up to?" He's like, "Oh, fucking nothing, man. Like, I've never been this bored in my entire life." He's like, "You know, I bought a bunch of stuff right out the gate, but now, I don't just kind of living.
What are you gonna do, huh?"
Just hanging out, drinking, smoking blunts, handing out ecstasy pills for everybody. Offer Raph cocaine. Yeah. He's like, "Nah, man, no. What are you talking about?" He's like, "Oh, I thought you were a Hollywood guy." He's like, "No." And he goes, "Here, try this." And he has like an ecstasy pill with the smiley face on it. And he goes, "See you on the other side."
See you guys later.
Takes the pill. The entire room takes the pill. And we get like a speed ramp of everybody playing spin the bottle. Lands on him, makes out with a girl, cut to him waking up on the couch. He kind of wakes up thinking he might still be on ecstasy because he sees a medieval knight standing in the kitchen.
Yeah.
But that's just Sheldon Cooper.
Yeah.
He's got the word balls written on his forehead.
Yeah.
I was so confused at this relationship when I watched it. And so, like, I literally have in my notes where I was just like, what is this relationship? Is she the mom? Are they brothers? Is she the mom or is she a lover? Oh, I get what's happening.
Oh.
I literally have things like scribbled out because I was like, oh, now I see. He is banging Sarsgaard's mom.
Yeah.
And that's the
relationship.
I was like, he's making fun of him because Sheldon Cooper, of course, speaks Klingon. He's got a type. And he whispers sweet nothing in Klingon to his mom's ear at night. To which Sarsgaard's like clowning on him, but then also speaks Klingon to him. And you see his face like change. He goes, "Do you know what that fucking means? It means get out of my fucking house or I'll cut your fucking head off." Just like awkwardly. He's got his armor on for some reason. And then, again, on my notes, I was like, why would he change at home? And then I was like, oh, because it was a late night fling and he came from work at his job at Medieval Times where he's a knight now. You know, I started in the kitchen. You got to pay your dues.
Got to pay the dues.
She's like,
when I met him,
like,
he was making coleslaw.
Yeah, the coleslaw
hasn't tasted the same since.
He's like, "I just mix it." She's like, "Nonsense."
"Hey, don't be so modest. You won the joust last night. Oh, congratulations. Don't get too excited. It's all written.
Yeah. It's all staged." Yeah. I just love when his night suit, it's like, he's like, "Get out of my fucking house." And it's all silent. He's just like, just noise from the suit. He's like holding his sword and like inching
sword
through.
Stuck
like,
in the back of the chair. Tangled up.
Like, this guy's cool.
He realizes that he's late for his neurological doctor's appointment that his dad set up for him because he gets these really small headaches. It feels like a bolt of lightning that goes right through his head for like a split second and then it's gone. So he goes to his doctor appointment. "Hey, sorry I'm late. I'm like 30 minutes late." He's sitting in the waiting room when he starts getting viciously humped on the leg by a sight dog. And that's when we hear a little giggle in the corner, and that's when we meet Natalie Portman. We're now 30 minutes into the film, and I was like, because I paused, it's like, how long does it take for her to show up? It's 30 minutes for an hour, 40-minute movie.
But then she never leaves, so.
Yeah, pretty much. And like what you were saying, Michael, she's just incredibly bubbly.
Yeah.
Is really kind of all up in his business.
Kick
just
him
about
in the
what
balls.
Are you signing the forms? What are you doing here? Yeah, just kick him in the balls. I don't want to like ruin a generation of sight dogs. And she goes, "No, it's fine. I have two Dobermans. That's how you have to do it. Just kick him right in the..." Oh, there's the lipstick.
Yeah, it's okay. I think he's almost done. She's like, "No, there's the lipstick."
Yeah. then the nurse comes and grabs the blind lady, and then she's like, "Oh, Arthur, let's go." And then he stops and he's like, goes off with her.
Yeah, see you later.
She pops a squiz knot right next to him. She's got the big, huge, heavy headphones on. She's like, "Hey, what do you got to sign the forms? What are you in here for?" "No, sorry, that was personal. Just go ahead and sign your forms." She says she recognizes him from TV because he played a mentally challenged quarterback. She fits the R word in about 12 times.
Yeah,
in
like just like one boom, sentence. Boom, 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 boom. I was like, "Whoa,
are you? You don't seem like it. Are you? Oh, wow, that's crazy."
I knew like, a guy that was, and he, yeah. Then he don't seem like it. Yeah.
Well, the cousin of mine, he's an actor, and he's not a good actor. You know, he's like, "I don't think he could play that as well as you." He's like, "It's crazy. I still can't get over the fact that you're not." Just, no, I'm not. Anyway, I get back to my, of course, the forms. What are you listening to? The Shins, they'll change your life. I'd let you listen. "Ooh, but you got the forms. What a conundrum." And he goes, "No, it's okay. I can listen." And that's when you get a little Shins interstitial. He listens about 12 seconds and he goes, "I like it. It's good." Didn't even listen to the whole song. Come on, Braff.
He's just being polite.
In real life, he's like, "I fucking hate the Shins, bro."
In real life, he's probably like, "What is this chick's deal?"
She tells him, "I'm just here waiting for a friend. What are you in here for?" And he goes, "Oh, you know, I get these like tiny little headaches." You know, he says it about 4 times in this movie, just kind of like in the exact same way every time. Feels like a bolt of lightning that hits my head, and then it's gone after a second. The nurse comes in and grabs him. "Oh, Andrew Largeman, you're up. Don't worry, Sam. We'll get you next." And that's when she like realizes that the nurse kind of outed her. She's there. We get that doctor's office that Braff was looking around because it's just absolutely coated in plaques,
metal certificates. Only to pan up
and see that there wasn't enough room for all the plaques, so there's one just on the ceiling. The doctor comes in, he's like, "There's nothing wrong with you." He goes, "There's not." And he goes, "I don't know, I can't say."
Then he continues to like vent about his personal life. Yeah. The doctor does, and you're like, "You need me for any of this?"
he kind of like goes through his papers, like, "How long you been on this drug? How long you been on this drug? How long you been on this drug?" "You know what I think, Andrew? I think you need a therapist, one who's not your dad. Your dad knows better.
A vacation."
He lets him know, he's like, "Well, I was heavily medicated since I'm 9, but I left all my pills in L.A. And he goes, "Oh, that stuff leaves the system pretty quick. You want me to get you a prescription?" He goes, "No, I think I'm taking a like a little hiatus, a little vacation off it. Haven't been this clear in a long time." The doctor comes up, literally comes up, sits next to him and goes, "Listen, I can't tell you whether or not you're supposed to be on this medication because I don't know your story. But what I do know is that your dad being a therapist is bad. You need to get yourself a new therapist. Your dad knows better. As far as the medication, you're paying for him. You know, you do what you want with him." He pieces out, gets on the motorcycle. He goes and gets a CT scan and that's when we see him shirtless with not just, we saw him with the word balls on his forehead, tagged. But he's just covered in like dicks. Just all over.
How embarrassing.
Very,
like,
very creative drawings.
Just go for a CT scan and you just got just crude artwork all over your body.
Dick, 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 dicks. He gets on his motorcycle, goes to the front, sees Natalie Portman standing up there. They talk a little back and forth. She's like, "This is the part in the conversation where you give me a ride home." And he goes, "All right, hop on." And she goes, "But I ain't riding side saddle. That's for bitches. And I ain't no bitch." He's like, "Okay." She has her own lacrosse helmet that she has with him. He's like, "What are you, like a hang glider or something?"
No, it's like a rugby helmet.
He's like, "Oh, you know, my boyfriend, you know, just dropped me off." And he's like, "Hey, before I drop you off at home, I was going to go hang out with my millionaire friend at the mansion. You mind if we stop there real quick? We can do this thing where, you know, we have a signal. You pull your ear if you want to go home. And I'll just be like, hey, I have to take her home." "Okay, sounds good."
Another Mikey favorite scene. It's also one of my favorite.
Definitely.
yeah.
shooting fiery arrows into the sky.
They go back to the bored millionaire, and he's just lighting arrows on fire, shooting them up into the sky. And they're running around from trying to dodge it from coming down.
The aerial shot of like the camera looking down at them and they're looking up and they're not like running away. They're just like three steps to the left, shimmy, shimmy to the right, three steps. Oh, I don't know what to do.
And then
the arrow comes down, lands right at Portman's feet. And then she just immediately grabs her ear,
yeah.
tugs on it.
It's like, let's get the fuck out of here.
They go to Portman's house, and it is absolutely chaotic at the house.
It's funny because I pull my ear when I tell my wife, like, let's go. Like, I'm uncomfortable.
I say, Kathy, I want to go. That's what I do. They go to Portman's home, and it is absolutely chaotic. Her mom lets her know your gerbil died. Again,
the little like the reminds me of The Office. I want to say Tube City, like the little like
hamster. Yeah, yeah. There's just hamster tubes everywhere. There's a Christmas tree up in the corner. Zagreb's getting mauled by Dobermans. Kick him in the balls! Kick him in the balls!
Yeah, immediately gets attacked by the Dobermans.
I just like how he just crumples in the corner. Just kick him in the balls, mom! Mom!
All right, we just don't have any time to train him, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Who's got the time, you know? Oh, by the way, your hamster died. He got caught in the wheel. He's like, all these hamsters we get, they can't seem to figure out how to get out of the wheel. They go back in the backyard where their pet cemetery is, and there's easily 30 pets buried back there.
Yeah, quite a few.
And he's just like, Jesus Christ. And she's like, don't worry, they're mostly fish. We're not bad pet owners, I promise.
I just have a pet cemetery.
Enough that we have to have one for her.
Yeah.
Like a fenced-in entrance and everything. I like how she's like, after you. So he like dips his head under like the 3-foot entrance, and then she just steps over the... That's another Mikey favorite scene. Yeah. Where they're burying the hamster, and then he kind of opens up how, you know, my mom just died on Sunday. He kind of throws in that she may have wanted it. They keep sprinkling in that maybe she didn't just slip in the tub. You know, she's a paraplegic, so her slipping in the tub would be pretty much a death sentence if there was nobody in there for her. But he keeps mentioning, like, in another time, he says that she would have wanted it like this.
Yeah.
Or maybe, yeah. So, yeah, possible suicide, not accident. Portman is absolutely distraught by this. Raph tries to change the subject. Hey, you know, it's bad to talk about somebody else who died at the funeral of a loved one. So she wants him to say some nice words about her hamster. And like he tries to make a joke. And he's like, oh, you know, Joey, didn't really know you.
Sounds like he had some trouble with the wheel.
And then she's like, don't.
She's like, not funny.
You know? Yeah. He's like, oh, geez. Sorry, I thought we had a moment of levity here, but I guess not. You know, she opens up, you know, I loved you, Jelly. I just really hope that you liked me back, kind of thing. And he's just like, damn, okay.
That dynamic, like the, well, they'll be kind of like riffing more or less. Yeah. And then she's like, don't. Like, that comes up so many times that it's almost like it's this weird little detail. You're like, oh, that's where the seriousness has to end or start. Like, I don't know. That part was pretty neat.
When I saw it, you know, that first time, I thought we were going to find out that she was, like, terminal. That's why she's at the hospital. So, like, him joking about death in general. But, you know, we just find out that, you know, she has epilepsy and, you know, she has her, you know, her issues. But I was waiting for that shoe to drop that she was on her deathbed. And so she's living life to the fullest, you know, like that kind of thing, because she doesn't have much time left.
Yeah,
that's not the case, but that's just the vibe I was getting that first time.
No, that's exactly how I felt the first time I watched it too.
Yeah, it's almost like every time she's like, no, stop, that's not fun. But it's like once that happens, you learn a new detail, and you like kind of further the relationship further progresses. So it's just it's a good spot.
Yeah. Back at home. You know, Braff's dad confronts him hiding behind the fridge. He's just like, you know, we need to have a conversation.
Scares the hell out of him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry, I scared you. Like, that's the last thing they say. He's like, you know, we have to have a talk. And he goes, yeah, you know, I'm leaving tomorrow. I'm hanging out with Sarsgaard later. Maybe Portman. But I could probably, like, pencil you in, like, right before. And he goes, okay, right before you go. Sorry, I scared you. And he turns around and walks away. While hanging out with Sarsgaard at the gravesite, you know, he sees that he is literally looting bodies of jewelry. And they have that moment where they're just, like, staring at each other's eyes because he's just like, fuck, he just watched me. And I'm assuming it's kind of an unspoken thing, but now you're maybe connecting dots. Did he also, he buried my mother. Did he also loot my mother's body?
For sure.
And we kind of have that moment where, like I said, it's unspoken, but we can both see them like having that conversation in their minds of like, fuck, he saw me. What's he thinking now? And then it's like, Braff's like, this fucking guy looted my mother's grave, didn't he?
Yeah.
We go back to Portman's home, and the mom puts on the old VHS tape of her ice skating.
And an alligator costume.
Oh, you are you the alligator? She goes, yeah, you could tell by the hands.
Yeah.
She's obviously embarrassed, and then she's like, no, we need to go anyway. We got to go to a bar and get drunk, only for Sarsgaard and his pals to all show up and be like, let's get fucked up, guys. We're going to Jesse's mansion. We're all just going to be sucking on the teat of the millionaire for the rest of our lives. Cut to them all at the pool. 3, 2, 1. They all jump in the pool except for, of course, Zach Braff, who's just standing there. And they're like, come on, why don't you jump in? And he goes, no, I don't want to. He's like, can you not even swim? He goes, I can swim. Cut to him doing like the worst doggy paddle. Hey, Largeman, why don't you just go sit on the steps, man? Because I don't even know CPR.
He's like, you look He's like a wet beaver.
I was going to say, what is he? Yeah.
Yeah. He goes over, sits on the steps, and Portman obviously swims over to him, and he goes, yeah, if this was my childhood.
I missed out on a lot of childhood things.
The gathering kind of dwindles down to just four people. We got Portman, Braff, Jesse, the millionaire, and Sarsgaard, where they're sitting in a large room empty. With a roaring fire, an empty. Why didn't you get any furniture? He's like, well, I had an easy chair, but I didn't like it. Well, what'd you do with it? It's keeping us warm right now. that's when we get the scene with the silent Velcro.
Love it.
Fucking silent Velcro. Braff kind of says, you know, he makes the comment, you know, if I would have come up with silent Velcro, they thought, you know, they probably would have put me away. Like, well, why would they have done that? He's like, oh, well, because they sent me away. Well, they sent you away? Well, they didn't send me away. Well, you just said they did. Then he kind of opens up that he is the reason his mom is a paraplegic. He was like, I was just a kid, 9-year-old kid. The house was always sad. Nobody was happy. My mom was clearly unhappy. And I just, out of anger, pushed her. And he goes, any day of the week, she would have just yelled at me and sent me to my room. We had this stupid dishwasher that the latch was always broken, so the door would just sometimes fall open. Some stupid piece of plastic corroded, and because I pushed my mom, she fell backwards, tripped over the door, hit her neck, broke her spine, and was paralyzed from the waist down.
Tragic.
My father blamed me for it, put me on all sorts of medication to curb my anger, and then also sent me away to boarding school, and I haven't been home since. So we have a really depressing, sad moment, only for it to be interrupted by a girl in her underwear just being like, where's the spa? So we get rid of the two doofuses. Oh, no, I'll show her where the spa is.
They
that way we
hop in
just
the
have
fucking golf cart.
Now we just have Braff and Portman, where he opens up, and he's like, you know, let's talk about some, you know, something good. She goes, well, I got a good buzz going. He goes, yeah, that is good. He goes, I got good feelings for you. You know, and she kind of like, oh, shucks. Want me to tap dance for you? Because that's just kind of the
She does have a history of doing spontaneous outbursts.
Well, she's got to do it because she wants to be the only person that's ever done it in that room. I love when she I love when she has him do it and he goes pew 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 pew. Yeah, I've already done that one. that next morning, it's Braff's last day in town. Sarsgaard says, "Hey, I'm getting you a going away present. So I need you to come with me." And he goes, "Well, I was going to hang out with Natalie Portman today." And he goes, "Yeah, she can come too."
Cool. She can come too.
Yeah. Cut to them all on the motorcycle and him just lounging in the sidecar. Like, reminded me of Jack Nicholson in Easy Rider, where they don't have a sidecar, but like that's the energy that he's giving is just like whatever, you know. He's got the cigarette hanging out of his mouth. They go to a Home Depot like place called like Handy World or something like that. He goes, "I just need to get something real quick." He goes and gets a set of knives, takes it immediately to customer service. And is like, "What about I don't want these."
The guy that they meet, the old high school guy.
Yeah. The snozzberries taste like snozzberries guy.
It's like, "Boy, do I have a unique situation for you."
"I thought you killed yourself, man." "No, I didn't." He goes, "You didn't kill yourself?" Like, obviously, no. I'm still standing in front of you. And he goes, "No, man, I didn't kill myself." And he goes, "Well, then who did?" Like, he's like, now he's just like, it was so-and-so, Tina, the dancer. "Oh, Tina, the dancer?" Like, Zach Braff is, like, super sad about it. He's like, "Oh. Anyway, you guys stay here. I got to go." He's like, "Oh, is it heavy? I can help."
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he's clearly got a pyramid scheme going. He goes, "I got a great business opportunity." And, like, and then he, like, clearly goes into prepared speech mode. "Boy, do I have a solution for you." And he goes, we should exchange numbers. He goes, yeah, we should.
He's got it.
Skarsgård comes in. He's got the knives, takes it to customer service. He's like, "Hey, listen, I don't want these knives. Well, do you have a receipt?" "No, I don't. They were a gift." And she goes, "Well, why don't you want them?" He goes, "They're not sharp enough." "What do you mean they're not? There's a sharpener in there." He goes, "What can I say? They didn't cut cans." "You're using them to cut cans?" "No, but the commercial said if I wanted to, I could." "Listen, I just don't want them, okay?" Whatever. She obviously, you know, gives him cash. He leaves, and he goes, "Yeah, so I do this thing where
through the employees.
If it's under $40 with no receipt, they'll still take it
back. They just give you cash. How often do you go?" "Well, I hit every employee once, and then I just wait for them to rehire." Luckily, people don't hang around at the Handy World except for Snozzberries Taste Like Snozzberries guy. He's the only long-standing employee. So he's like, "Luckily, so I have the $40. I'm going to use this $40 to buy a tank of nitrous, and then we're going to go to some creepy-ass fucking hole-in-the-wall hotel where you can just be watching everybody fuck in different rooms, where Method Man is like..."
Great cameo. "Raise your hands if you just saw some titties."
"Just saw titties."
That's what I thought.
It's like the bellhop there who gives him the tank and nitrous. "Now, I want the tank back, too, because that dickhead has got my $39.99, holding fee for it."
He's like, "You got any balloons?" "No, I don't have balloons.
No, I don't have any balloons.
I look like a clown?"
He tells him, "Okay, with this, go to the quarry. You're going to meet a guy named Albert. He's got what you're looking for." Cool. Now we're going to a quarry. A giant hole in the ground. Zach Braff and him have that moment where he's like, "Dude, if we were just going to buy Coke, like, I would have said, I'm good." And he goes, "Brother, if we were going to get Coke, we'd go to the football practice and we could have been high 5 hours ago." He's like, "We're not going to get Coke." Yeah, he starts popping off and he's like super defensive. He's like, "We don't need to be ruining this sweet, innocent girl." And she's like, "I'm not innocent. Stop trying to protect me. You're my knight in shining armor." And he goes, "Whoa, don't say knight in front of Sarsgaard. It's a touchy subject." He goes, "Oh, you motherfucker." And he goes, pun intended. He picks him up like he's going to tombstone him.
Yeah, he's got, shit.
I was like, "Oh, shit, here we go. Rest in peace." He does, and he puts it away, and she's like, oh, I think it's going to rain. How'd you know? Because it rains hard now. They go to this giant hole in the ground. They were like, yeah, they were going to build a mall here. But they dug, and then they happened upon a natural, like some sort of natural phenomenon where it was like a New Jersey Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
But now nothing can happen because it's in litigation. They're trying to figure out if they can even build here. That's where we meet Albert, who lives in a boat, not down by the river, but down by the quarry.
Down in the quarry.
With his wife and baby. And he says that he was hired by the state to keep people out. But during the night, I explore. Albert's Abyss, they call it. Finally, you know, and he said, I was expecting a bigger reaction out of this. Because they're like, well, why do you live down here? And he goes, oh, I wanted to do something that I didn't think anybody else had ever done before. Which is exactly what Natalie Portman said about making, you know, and they don't have a reaction to it at all. Kind of surprising to me. You would have thought they would have had like a shared look or something.
Yeah, but then, but what it is right after that is when he climbs up onto the equipment and he yells down into the quarry. That's the moment.
Yeah.
And then she climbs up and joins him and then, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He gives him a bag and says, this is what you're looking for. It took me a long time to track down. Hey, it's raining pretty hard. Here's some garbage bags. They go outside. And then, like you said, yeah, they climb up on that old crane that looked like it's been there for like 60 years, where he screams into the abyss. I took that more as not necessarily a moment no one's ever done, but just like him finally releasing all that.
Yeah, you know. it's a unique moment for him to yell into the abyss all of his problems away.
Release some demons.
And then they finally share that kiss that we've been waiting for them to have this entire time. You know, she mentions a few times, we're not going to make out. What? Oh, just
Sarsgaard is just like creeping on him.
There's that moment where
watching him, and then I'm like, he's got to turn away at some point, right?
But he just kind of like side-eyes them, and then it was almost like the camera's like, shit, he's not supposed to be in the shot.
Yeah.
So they zoom in a little just to like, and then stop once he's out of frame.
Yeah.
They hop back on the motorcycle, they drive home, they drop Sarsgaard off, to which he hands him the baggie. He opens it up, and just as we suspected, he had looted his mother's grave. He kind of plays it off like, yeah, you should have had it, man. You know, it belongs with you, not down there. But, you know, I think really he was just like, maybe I'm connecting dots that don't exist, but in my brain he was like, I got caught. He knows. I'm going to try to track it down.
No,
kind of thing.
He even says, like, he says something to the effect that, yeah, I'm a piece of shit, but I got it back, right? Like, I got it back.
Yeah, so it's
like,
so it's cool.
It's cool. Like, I did the right thing.
Yeah. It was his mother's favorite pendant necklace. I think it's kind of wild that they're, like, sharing a moment in the same tub that his mother drowned in, and, like, that just never gets
that
brought up.
A little morbid, or however you want to describe it, but yeah.
Like, they're having a touching moment in the tub. I kept waiting for him to be like, oh, and this is the tub it happened in.
Yeah.
But that doesn't happen. He gets out, confronts his father, who is asleep in bed. You know, shoes on the other foot, I'm scaring you now. Andrew, come on in. he kind of opens up. You know, they have that moment where he's just like, I just wanted everybody to be happy again. And then he's just like, when the fuck were we ever happy?
Yeah.
Tell me so we can get there. I'm trying to remember, and maybe I'm so fucked up on meds that I can't remember when there was a time, but if I could remember, I would do my best to get us back to this point. Unfortunately, you blame me for this accident when I was just a 9-year-old kid. I don't think it's my fault. What I think is that somebody made a shitty latch. While we're on the point, I'm not taking these meds anymore, and you're fired as my therapist. Kind of sits on the bed, and he's just like, we will be okay. Like, hand on his chest. He's sitting there. His father's taking it. We are going to be okay if you just let us be ourselves. We're going to be fine. His dad, you know, kind of shakes his head, and then that's, you know, all right, going back to L.A. now. We cut to them at the airport, Natalie Portman. and Braff, and he just says, this isn't the end of our relationship. This is, I think he uses the term, this is the period to the sentence.
No, he said it's not the period, it's the ellipsis.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true, because then they bring it up later.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, screw the ellipsis. That
nah,
was
fuck
idea.
The ellipsis.
I don't know why.
He says, you know, I need to figure my shit out. I'm paraphrasing, but he says, I need to figure my shit out first before, you know, I can focus on us. So I need to go home and do that. You know, cut to him on the plane. Dong. You know, we get the overhead narration again. We see her in the phone booth crying, a la John Cusack from Say Anything. Mm-hmm. Only this time the door opens and she says, what are you doing here? And he's like, yeah, no, fuck the ellipses. I don't know what I was thinking. That was stupid. I'm here with you. You're my, I don't know what we're going to do, but we're going to do it together. They share that long kiss as the camera pans out. End of movie, guys.
Chef's kiss.
Yeah. I will say I enjoyed this conversation about it.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's one of those things where you're like, maybe I enjoyed it a little more than I think I did. Again.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't me saying, boo. Yeah. I'm glad we watched it. I'm glad we watched it. I'm glad we got to talk about it. Especially when it's a movie that I know one of us, in general, is very passionate about.
I do love this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there was a when Zach Braff is talking to his dad and he's like just like basically stop putting so much, just like let us be us, and like it was kind of a good, I don't know, like you can see as the movie's going on, like he's kind of in these kind of roles or like kind of, I don't know, within society he's just like, well I'm a server, I'm doing all this, and now he's basically just like, just fucking live, man,
live,
you know, just go through it, like.
And then cut to them at the airport, and I was like, okay, here we go. He's going to get on the plane, and we're going to cut back to the beginning of the plane going down.
Oh.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously that doesn't happen, so I was like, that's weird that they added that scene in there for some reason. Maybe it was just him having turbulence on the way to Jersey, but like, so, and then watching it again, I was like, oh, it's clearly just a dream. But, yeah, so that's how I thought this movie was going to end, once we find out that, no, she isn't going to die. Oh, duh, remember the beginning? He's the one who's going to die after everything is fine now. Yeah. But then, yeah, sometimes things can just be fine.
That is true.
Yeah, loved it. That was great.
Glad you guys enjoyed it.
Yeah. Any other closing musings you want to talk about, Brandon?
You guys don't want to talk about the Desert Storm trading cards?
Only all the time. I love he that almost scene. Has a complete set. You know, someone stole his Wolf Blitzer.
And there's a callback, actually, when he gives him the necklace, and he's like, if you ever need Kato, and he's talking about the Kato card, and yeah, that's a good callback to that scene. But it's funny, though. He's like, how much is this worth? $2. He's like, $2? It's like,
it's an investment.
It's an investment.
What do you know about investing?
He's like,
you don't sell
them
now.
Well, and then when they're standing at the boat before they meet Albert, he mentions, he's like, all this just for a fucking trading card. He's like, hey, don't make fun of my fucking hobbies, okay? I don't make fun of you for how much you're an asshole, okay?
Yeah, those two back and forth is like gold. I mean, their little quips back and forth are great.
Oh.
Good banter for sure.
Yeah, great banter. Yeah, no. It's a good movie.
Do you want to talk about what we're doing next week?
Let's do it.
Yeah. Well, Brandon, it's your movie again.
Holy.
We're jumping a whole year into the future. 2005. A movie I never thought we'd be doing on this year podcast, but we're doing Wedding Crashers, guys.
Yeah.
And that movie makes me want to shout. So we will be back next week. We're closing out Brandon's picks in the rom-com section with Wedding Crashers. So what do you say we go wow and cut print check the gate?
See you guys.
See ya.